Welcome to the ECE Quality Ireland podcast. I'm Celine Govran.
And I'm Paula Walsh. And today we're going to be discussing the various curriculum models that are out there that we all learn about during our training. We're going to discuss why some settings might actually choose to follow a particular curriculum approach or a curriculum model, and how that either does or does not align with the ASHTER framework. And, you know, the curriculum being child-led and emergent and following the needs of, you know, the unique child. So this stems back to a conversation that myself and yourself had, Celine, a couple of weeks ago, where you had a bit of an aha moment. So maybe we'll start with you giving a bit of background on that.
Yeah, super. So that's exactly what happened. I had the aha moment and wondered, was I dreaming? So I contacted you and ran my aha moment by you, and I think you had the same moment. So my son, who is currently working with us on his work placement, is an engineering graduate who is changing his field of work and coming to work as a preschool teacher. So he's doing his level five in a wonderful college that I won't name, but it really is a wonderful course. And I, as you know, run a service which I consider to be completely child-led. So, you know, week on week he was coming home and he was saying, as he was learning about the different curriculum models, he was saying, do you know what? We're really very Frebble. And I'd say, well, I can see a bit of Frebble there, but, you know, I'm really child-led. And he was saying, oh, okay. And then the next week he'd say, do you know what? You're really Montessori. And I say, oh, I'm definitely not Montessori. I'm child-led. And he'd say, well, I can see a lot of Montessori. And this went on and went on, and it went on with Steiner, and it went on with Highscope, and it went on with ASHTER. And, you know, and then he said, this blew me away. He said, why would any school choose to operate just one model? Because he said, most schools have 22 children. When he says schools, he's referring to early years preschools. So he said, one model is never going to take into account the needs and the wants and the likes and diswants and the personalities of all of the children. He said, why don't services understand and facilitate all of the different models? And in such case, then we are truly meeting the needs of the child. And I couldn't answer him. I said, oh, I don't know. But I've been thinking about it since.
Yeah. And I know it was a bit of an aha moment for me too. And, you know, I think there are a lot of settings, and a lot of people will probably think, well, we are child led too. And I've no doubt that that's most settings, you know, align themselves as much as they can with the child and their emergent interests and stuff. But yes, you know, there are schools that, well, sorry, preschools and early childhood education settings who will, from the outset, when they set up and when they get going, say, well, we're following the Montessori approach, or we're a Steiner school, or, you know, we're a Waldorf school, or whatever the case may be. So really, then, you know, that is a decision pre-made without consultation with the children, without getting to know the children, you know. You know, I wonder how that, you know, aligns authentically with ASHTER for a start. And, you know, there must be some kind of, you know, ASHTER is a framework upon which we can sort of build, you know. So my thinking is that, as your son so rightly said, is that, you know, we learn all about all the different curriculum frameworks, the curriculum approaches and the curriculum models. And we have that knowledge to be able to build a unique curriculum on the ASHTER framework that meets the needs and the interests of all the individual children. And that's something that, you know, even every year needs to be re-looked at, because from year to year, the children who come in September and leave in June have a completely different set of interests, completely different personalities and backgrounds, completely different funds of knowledge, you know, that they bring that are going to be different and have a different dynamic than the year before. So yeah, and I know from my own experience, you know, I managed an outdoor preschool, and although we were child-led, and play based. When we had to, you know, and some people would ask the question, and, you know, we discussed on some documentation, you're asked, you know, what philosophy alignment, we would have said, oh, well, we're very regio, I suppose. But at the same time, what about that child who would actually really benefit from, you know, a more Montessori philosophy, who's in that school, who's in that setting, you know? So I think it's a real point for reflection, isn't it, to think about, well, how, what we're doing, how we're doing it, and, you know, is it right in a way to align ourselves from the outset with one curriculum approach for those settings that do? And that's not to say there's nothing wrong with those curriculum approaches, because I think they all have a lot to give, but they're not going to suit every child. And you can't, can you, or can you be truly child-led, I suppose, if
you align with
guiding in advance?
And I mean, you know, I suppose I would resist, and I have done this very strongly over the last few years, and it's taken a long time to get here, but I tend to resist anything that's too adult led. So as soon as I find myself doing too much, I have to step back and say, is this too adult led? And then I look at deciding, you know, if I, for example, was to decide we are a Freble school, well, that's an adult decision taken by me as the provider. And then I impose that decision on the staff that I hire, because I'm telling them that regardless of their belief or their training, that my school is a Freble school. I'm just using this as an example. And then I'm imposing that on the children as well. So I've really stepped across the line that I've drawn for myself in terms of stepping back from being adult led. But, you know, it's also important to note that this is not a criticism of any model. You know, I mean, I'm familiar, as you are, as we all are, with most of the models, some more than others, and they all have merit and they all have wonderful things to offer. I would definitely also say that some of them are of their time, and, you know, that they were developed in the 1700s and 1800s and were very relevant in an era where childhood early years education had not even been looked at or examined, and they were insightful and, you know, really gave an insight into how children develop, etc. But we have moved on, and it's 2022. So I would say that all of the models have elements in them that we can draw on from each of them. And within our settings, because every setting is different, how we bring them together and merge them into one curriculum model that suits our setting is probably going to be different for every single setting in the country.
Yeah, you know? And you know what? I would imagine, you know, that if you were, you know, 100% saying, "Where I'm a Steiner school or I'm a Montessori school," but then you have this ASTRA curriculum framework that, and you know, we have to be child-led. We want to be child-led and to consider the rights of the child and their voice and their participatory rights, you know, to have a say. And we want to look at their emergent interests. I would imagine that a school that does sort of, you know, very much align themselves with a particular curriculum approach must have to bend that approach and flex it around the child and find that maybe there's elements that they have to move away from, you know, what would what the original sort of strict philosophy of it, you know, so to speak, you know, is. And then that begs the question, you know, why align yourself to that model in the first place if you know you're going to have to bend, you know, and why, you know, as you say, a lot of these, you know, the models that we are aware of, they were probably brought about and introduced and, you know, theorized before the general society's perception of the child as an individual with their own rights and, you know, what came to be. So yeah, I feel that, you know.
I mean, absolutely.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And when we look at, sorry, go ahead, Celine.
No, go on. So yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that the voice of the child 200 years ago, you know, was certainly, I'm not saying that they didn't look to that, but not to the extent that we do now. You know, you know, Froebel, Montessori, they were all interested in the child. The child was the center of all of the philosophies, but their perception of how much influence the child should have on their own learning is different to how we view it now. And to, I mean, to, and I, you know, you'd have to beg the question in 100 years time, you know, this conversation will be very different again, because societies change and cultures change and everything changes, you know, and academia changes and all that kind of stuff. Something that always I always find really interesting is this conversation in relation to parents. You know, do parents have, do they understand? Do they make informed decisions? Do they feel that even though we're all, certainly in a preschool in Ireland, we're all on the ECHI scheme, we all follow the ASHTER framework, we're all inspected in the exact same way. Do, however, parents feel that schools that offer a very strict, I'm going to say Montessori, you know, and that Montessori is in their title, do parents feel for some reason that that's superior?
So that there's perhaps like an unconscious bias towards what their understanding of a particular curriculum approach would be. And in saying that, I also think that there might be, you know, there would be a lot of preschools and early childhood education settings out there that might have a particular word in their name, but yet they don't actually implement that curriculum strictly, you know. So yeah, I think perhaps that is a question that maybe there is a sort of an unconscious sort of bias there.
I feel there is my suspicion is that there is, you know. And I think parents have no way really, I think it's changing a little bit, but I think in previous years, parents genuinely did think that a school that offered a particular type of curriculum was offering more than a play school or preschool. That is, of course, changing now. And certainly within the sector, we understand the importance of play now. And I think hopefully it's filtering into the parents. But yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about the schools around me. I have two titles. I don't know how it ever happened. In some documentation, I'm the village preschool, and another documentation, I'm the village play school. It, you know, it's just the way it has happened. But yeah, around me, we would have a lot of the Montessori, whatever, or the village Montessori, or these are names I'm making up. But you know, they are specific curriculum models within the name, so it does define that that's what they're doing. But I think you're right, based on all of my visits, and I do a lot of visits to settings, they are doing it loosely.
Yeah And that's not to say there's something wrong with that either, but I suppose the question we're asking is if you're going to align yourself with a particular framework and you're going to do it loosely, probably out of necessity from having to, you know, follow the ASHTER framework, and because you're taking into consideration the rights of the child, and you know, you're trying to do that authentically, but within the constraints perhaps of a particular curriculum approach, whether that be Froebel, Steiner, whatever it may be, then why bother to put that there? Why bother to lay that out in the first place? You know, because I think when we look at the Shield to Standard of Curriculum, that doesn't say that we have to have a curriculum. It says we have to have a curriculum or a framework, I think it says, you know. It says a verifiable, broad-based, documented and flexible curriculum or programme. So when you consider ASHTER, that's certainly verifiable. It's documented and it's flexible. Mm-hmm. It's not a program, a curriculum, it's a framework. So whatever program you're implementing. And to be broad based, surely you have to bring in elements of all curriculum approaches, you know, building that upon. I think of it like a patchwork of them all built upon, held up by the ASHTER curriculum framework. The patches that you put on and the amount of them drawn from each different kind of your knowledge base or your funds of knowledge from all the different curriculum frameworks or the different curriculum approaches, then, you know, will be dictated by the interests and the needs of the unique children that you have in your setting at any one time. So it can't remain fixed. You know, it has to be, you know, flexible. And it's going to change week to week, year to year, child to child, you know. I would merely argue that, you know, each child needs their own individual curriculum. You know, they really do. You know, and that we were talking about, you know, I think it was Rudolf Steiner who said, the child is the curriculum, which is very true. But yes, the child can't truly be the curriculum within the constraints of any particular curriculum approach. It has to be the child is the curriculum. And then we build their unique curriculum based on the ASTRA framework, drawing on all of our knowledge from all the other approaches. That's what I feel. And I think a lot of places are doing that. And maybe most places are doing that. But the purpose of the discussion is, well, then why align yourself with a particular approach? Why put yourself in that pigeonhole?
In that box. You're putting yourself in a box. And I love your imagery of the patchwork curriculum. And I do a lot of patchwork myself with fabric. So I can really see, I see the image now is in front of me. But, you know, I think, I mean, I'm in operation. We're going into our 20th year and things were very, very, very different 20 years ago. And, you know, I started and we learned as we went, you know, and I certainly didn't start with any particular, model in my head. And it was only a few years later when my model developed in such a way, and it was influenced by the fact that I was a rural school. It was influenced by the kinds of children who came to me, mostly from farming backgrounds. It was influenced by the kind of parents that we had, by the kind of environment that we had access to, because my school is in a certain place. And so therefore, that is our environment, and by our community and all of those things. And it was only then, actually, that I looked at the way my model had developed, and I looked at all of the different theories and curriculum models, and I realized that I am probably, and it has happened organically, I am most like a Reggio Emilia school. So, you know, rather than me saying, this is what I want to be, and my staff and my parents and my community, and most importantly, my children will all fit into this, I actually did it the opposite way. It all happened by accident. I didn't plan any of that. But on reflection of what I was doing and the kind of school that I had created in the first 3 or 4 years, I began to realize that the one I was most like now, in the last few years, we went outside full time around 4 years ago, 3 to 4 years ago. There's a huge amount of Frebble in there, you know, Frebble and the kindergarten. There's a huge amount. But I'm still not letting Reggio go, because there's a huge amount of Reggio with me as well. You know, the village style approach, we're right in the middle of the village, community and parents. We went for a visit today up to the local allotments and we saw the hens, and that's hosted by the community and the parish in that particular housing estate. You know, we had our parents in this week and we went on a big, big walk around another park in the village. That's all Reggio. The free flow, the open plan, the open door to the outside, that's all Reggio, you know. And really for me, the environment in Reggio was one of the reasons why I went, oh, that's us. Our environment is so good. It's like having the third adult in the classroom, you know. But now I'm beginning to see Frebble is coming as well, you know. And as you say, depending on the children I have next year, something else is going to come in there. And I'm sure even without realizing it, I have Montessori and I have Steiner and I have Waldorf. I have them all. So I need to understand them all, don't I? And I need to be able to recognize which one each child needs at this moment in their life.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I feel genuinely, and this is something I've thought about a few times, I actually feel the amount of curriculum approaches that we are exposed to in our formal training is quite limited. And I think it should be broadened out. I came across a philosophy around education there purely by accident last year. And I wrote a blog on it. And it was a Ukrainian man called, what was his name? Vasily Sukhomlinsky, which I'm sure I'm pronouncing incorrectly.
No doubt.
And he was very much about the community and, you know, but everything was centered around the child's interests and, you know, the children decided what they would learn. This was more of at a primary school level, you know.
Yes.
The children would decide what they would learn. They'd forge very close links with the community. You know, for example, if children couldn't come into school because they were ill, their classmates would be brought to visit them, things like that. And I just thought, I loved it. And I went, why have I never heard of this person before?
No, well, neither have I. Hands up, like, neither have I.
It's like what I call the usual suspects that we learn about, yeah. You know, which, and we learn about them for a reason because they have a lot to give and they're, you know, tried and tested, I suppose. And, you know, and they do have, they all have, you know, their merits. But there's so yeah. much out there that we should, you know, be looking to, that we can draw upon as well. And have you heard of, and I'm sure you have, the Sudbury School approach?
I have heard of the Sudbury School approach and I read about it. It's a number of years ago now and I'm just not as up to date as I should be. Remind me.
So the Sudbury School, so their philosophy, I have a thing open here in front of me to remind me because I would have absolutely loved to send my children to a Sudbury school, but mm-hmm. there's none close to me. And there's only a few in the country. Now, they are private and fee paying, which also is yeah. another barrier, unfortunately. But I certainly think that the standard curricula, you know, right through from, you know, the whole continuum, right through from early years, right through to secondary and third level could draw a lot more on it. And it's basically they don't have a curriculum. It's like the homeschool philosophy, but in an environment, you know.
Yes.
So they're, yeah. you know, I'm just reading here off my screen about from a Sudbury school. So the Sudbury philosophy, Sudbury school students have total control over what they learn, how they learn, their educational environment, how they are evaluated. They choose their curriculum. They choose their method of instruction through a democratic process. And this, it very much reminded me of that guy that I can't remember his name, Sokolinsky, I think his name is.
Ukrainian chap.
Yeah, Vasily, I'll call him because that was his first name. That's easier for me to say. Sorry to any Ukrainian people who are listening. But yeah, and, you know, in that he also was very much of, you know, the children decide, and both the Sudbury philosophy as well. The teachers need to have practical hands-on skills that they are able to impart to the children. Yes. And I just loved that. And I thought that
yeah,
was
do you know what? There was a program on either BBC or Channel 4 a couple of years ago, and it was the Sudbury School approach or model. And it was about secondary school children who had opted out or were school refusers. In the standard secondary school model in England, and they went to a Sudbury school, and it was fascinating. I'll see if I can find the link and we can pop it with the podcast maybe when we post yeah. it. Really, really interesting. And my goodness, they do decide. They decide if they want to explore World War One, that is the history that the teacher plans for and you know, the kids go off and they decide what part of that war that they want to examine. You know, there's absolutely nothing adult directed. They're facilitated constantly, and it really is nice.
And
as you say, pain. Yeah,
and I do think that ethos and that philosophy is what we do try to do when we say we're trial-led and emergent. You know, that's why Shielta has a standard of consultation and interactions and the rights of the child. That's why children have those participatory rights that we need to be, you know, authentically including them in the decision making as opposed to, you know, and that can be difficult, you know, to do authentically because, you know, like that, we have to be able to stand back. But our role is facilitator, I think, first and foremost.
Completely. Yeah, go on.
No, I was just going to say, so that's sort of where our conversation was coming from initially about why you align yourself, why pigeonhole, because it also brings into play, I think, the power balance between the adult and the child. If you're deciding in advance, as you say, we are such and such a curriculum approach, you know, even
where
if
is
you,
their voice? Where is their voice in that? Yeah, no, I completely agree.
There has to be some kind of a conflict, you know, so I think that, you know, similar to the Sudbury thing, the Sudbury philosophy, that the skills that we bring as educators into the preschool, the early childhood approach, is our what should be a vast and broad-based knowledge of all curriculum frameworks, so that we can build that individual, you know, curriculum around patchwork each curriculum. Individual child, yeah. The patchwork curriculum on the ASTRA framework, you know. Yeah,
I completely agree. I think it's been a wonderful conversation. I hope people engage and share their ideas. We're not criticizing any one curriculum. We want to know about them all, and we're interested. Yeah. And it's all about the child at the end of the day, and exactly. Putting them at the center of everything.
And it's really important that we, you know, we do have conversations like this, and we take time to reflect on what we're doing and why we're doing it and the way we're doing it. And that's a really important part of professional practice as well.
Yeah, so that was a fantastic discussion. So just before we sign off, I just want to wish everybody a really nice summer. For anybody who is finished up now for the 2 months, sit back and enjoy and reflect. And for anybody who is continuing on in full daycare services, I hope you get a little bit of respite. And we look forward to a really busy podcast schedule over the next academic year. We have a wonderful lineup planned. We just have to convince all of them on the list that they must take part.
Absolutely. I'm really looking forward to seeing where the podcast goes next year. As you say, there's a few really interesting and exciting guests and then obviously yeah. some interesting and exciting discussions with just the two of us. So thank yeah. you to everybody for listening, and we will talk to you all soon. You can follow us and get us on various platforms where you get your podcast, and you can follow us on Twitter, ECE Quality Ireland. And thanks for listening. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.